Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the host of the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast, and I am also the founder of the Rise Above Justice Movement. Today, I would like to give a very brief viewer discretion as advised, as the topics that we will be discussing can be triggering to some audiences. Again, viewer discretion is advised. Today, I am joined by my friend Perla. Perla, welcome to the Rise of Justice Movement podcast. Feel free to introduce yourself and give us a backstory on who Perla is.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited about this podcast. So, yes, a little bit about me. Currently I am a programming and grants manager at Restorative Houston. We are a restorative justice nonprofit org in Houston. But kind of a little background on me, I was raised very evangelical Christian, conservative, and I've always been very passionate about social justice. So I've been involved with anti-trafficking organizations. I worked for a substance abuse a recovery nonprofit as well. I don't know kind of where it came from. I think just my upbringing, my mom's very empathetic, so it kind of rubbed off on me. And then I kind of transitioned out of the corporate. It was technically a nonprofit, but it felt very corporate, to become a certified life coach, because again, I've always been passionate about helping people, just helping people in general in any way that I can. However, I did get severe burnout when I left my job, my 9 to 5. So even though I did get certified as a life coach, just the burnout was still super intense. And so I realized very quickly that, starting your own business takes a massive amount of energy that I didn't have. So that's when I kind of transitioned into this part-time position that I have now with Restorative Houston. But yes, overall, I am just really passionate about social justice issues, and specifically anything to do with mental health and trauma recovery. That's kind of the gist.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk a lot about like Christian nationalism, and we talk a lot about white supremacy and like the intersectionality of how it goes into social justice, like focused organizations, also movements like the Rise of Justice Movement, which I am the founder of. And I'm deeply excited to talk about this topic because the intersectionality is so incredibly crucial and oftentimes overlooked. And for those who don't know, can you explain what restorative justice looks like to you and how you use it in your community?
Absolutely. So restorative justice to me is, well, personally, I obviously grew up in a very punitive world view with the kind of evangelical, my world view is incredibly punitive. And just in Texas in general, it's a very punitive culture. And so when I first heard of restorative justice, it just sounds amazing, restorative justice. But I personally have seen in my personal life, it's very challenging, especially coming from that background for me, has been very challenging in certain aspects of it. For example, certain things I'm like, oh, absolutely, they need to be punished. But being a part of Restorative Houston has made me challenge myself and be like, wait, is there another way though? Like, is punishment the only option for these certain, acts or, and of course there are situations and people that just refuse to to work through things and be restored or restore a relationship or take accountability. And that's out of our hands. And there's always going to be those situations. But in every other situation where both parties are willing to have a conversation, to come to an understand, to make understanding more important than being right or punishment or revenge, I'm realizing more and more, especially in the climate that we're in, how important and really that is the only way forward is for us to, as much as humanly possible, try to just deal with our trauma 100%, because if we don't deal with our own personal trauma, there's no way we can reconcile or restore any kind of relationship with another person. So that's a really important part of it. But once we deal with our side of it, I feel like it's very important to then engage with the community, with other people, in order to really try to find common ground and work through our conflict in a healthy way where there is actual accountability within the community, out of relationship, which is why we push community a lot. Because if the structure that we're in right now, accountability is done without community or relationship. I mean, everything is super transactional and kind of detached and individualistic. So somebody commits a crime, they get punished, but there's no community involved. Like there's, so for us, it's equally as important to cultivate community as it is to cultivate restorative justice, because we don't believe in restorative justice without community. Anyway, I think, I don't know if that answers the question, but yes.
I think it does answer the question, and it actually kind of paints a picture into like the next question. And October 1st begins Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And there's a lot of movement around raising awareness about domestic violence and sexual assault and around survivors. And there's an organization that was founded by my friend Marley, that is called Survivors for Justice Reform. And it focuses on restorative justice, but also transformational justice. And it's an international movement of survivors coming together to work within these systems to focus on the restorative justice and transformational justice. And I think it's incredibly crucial to also, recognize that there's a lot of different approaches to it. And sitting through one of the restorative justice circles myself, I felt connected to other people because at that time there was no social media, or there was social media, but nobody was on their phones. And everybody put their phones away. We all came together and we talked about issues that our communities are facing. And whenever I tell you, that was one of the most healing experiences that I've ever set through. I feel that we need more of that. I feel if people understood the deep importance and the deep meaning behind it, because we see a colonized nation, and restorative justice goes back to it focuses on like that decolonization aspect. Like whenever we think about decolonizing, we think of decolonizing self-care. We think of decolonizing our communities and going back to the actual roots of community organizing and community coming together to fight back against these oppressive and systematic systems, or a systematic oppression, is what I tried to say. But whenever you sit through these circles, what do you see? How do you see like your connection to it? And would it have been beneficial, going through your trauma that you had faced? How would it have shaped your future a little bit differently? Does that question make sense?
Yes, if I had access to
Mm-hmm.
the restorative justice circles earlier in my life.
Yes.
Yes, I mean, my gosh, I honestly think I would have left Christianity way sooner because one of the biggest draws from, Christian religion is community and is connection. But obviously in my experience, like it's my personal opinion, but in my personal opinion, community within religion is artificial. It's not authentic. There is no real connection because it is incredibly conditional. Whereas outside of religion, where people are free to connect based on actual authentic connection without any conditions, that is where the power is, in my experience, has been where the power is, because there is no agenda or hidden agenda or like, oh, we want you to, convert and whatever. It's just human to human connection. And within these circles, there's so many people that show up that have never done something like this. And for whatever reason, maybe it's because it's easier to open up with strangers sometimes. But a lot of people end up opening up in a way that I am shocked a lot of the times because when they come in, they're very closed off. Like you can just tell their body language is really nervous, a lot of very guarded. But throughout the process, also, because when you see other people share and be vulnerable, it really gives you courage to do the same. And even sometimes people that don't open up a whole lot, like at the end, in the closing round, where we ask them, so what did you guys get out of the circle today? What did you learn? They'll say really profound things that, again, I'm really shocked by. So whether and that's also the beauty of the circles is you there's no pressure. Like, yes, we encourage everyone to participate and speak up, but obviously there's no actual pressure. And you do whatever you're comfortable with. However, like I can tell people really get a lot out of it, whether they open up a whole bunch or are pretty quiet. The impact is still there.
And that's the key goal, is the impact aspect of it. Rather if the kind of like you said, the group that I sat in and the circle that I sat in on, there was a lot of people that are very quiet. I'm an oversharer, so I like shared, I practically talked the entire time. But at the end of it, people came up to me and they were like, wow, what you said really did hit. I know I didn't like I say it right there and then, but and that and honestly that feels that's like the best feeling right there in itself. And
Absolutely.
I haven't sat in one in a very long time, and I feel that more communities, communities are struggling right now. And we have our communities that are unhoused. We have communities that are being torn apart by gun violence or, by sexual violence, and it's running very rampant throughout our communities. And I think this would be really incredible. To talk more about what does or what how is the community responding to these circles? And what I mean by that is, you have people coming to the circles. Are other communities around Houston starting to do this as well in Texas, or what are you noticing?
I am noticing that a lot. Yes. Well, so restorative justice circles is a very specific method of doing community. What we are seeing as an organization is a lot of other organizations coming to us and wanting to partner with us. So, for example, I am partnering with an art studio for Dia de los Muertos, November 2nd, first and 2nd. And we're gonna, even though that's not their thing per se, they are bringing us in to facilitate a community circle at their event, where we're going to speak about ancestry, healing, and community relationships in the circle on the Dia de los Muertos event that they are hosting with another. So the it's called Mecca, the actual place. It's a Latino organization that hosts a lot of events for the Latino community. And then the art studio is the one that's going to actually do this part of the, it's a festival, but they're going to host this specific part of it. Plus, we're going to do some eco printing with flowers. And so we're getting a lot of that kind of thing. So we're doing that. There's another organization, actually a church, that reached out to us to go facilitate harm repair circles at their church because of an incident that happened. Yes, that's incredible. Like, that was a full circle moment for me. I actually cried. And so, yeah, we actually had a domestic violence organization reach out to us as well to see how we can partner with them, whether that's for us to go in and facilitate circles or to train them, because that's another big, huge part of Restorative Houston's mission, is to train people to be able to facilitate circles in whatever sphere of influence they're in. So, yeah, so that we are seeing a lot of interest, a lot of need from the community. And we are training. So we actually right now are just started our second cohort of circle keeping. It's we call it an apprenticeship, where we train people to hold circle and facilitate circle, because it's important for us to make sure people know where this method comes from, because it does come from indigenous cultures and practices. And so we really drill that into the people that we train, because the last thing we want is to appropriate yet another thing from indigenous people. And then we also make sure people, because as you probably know, doing a lot of interviews, emotional intelligence is a very rare skill. Not everybody has the capacity and the skills to hold space for these kind of events and these kind of circles, because there's a lot that comes up. People's emotions are on the line, people's mental health. Like, it takes a lot. It's not just a matter of, oh, let's get together and talk. Like, it requires, in my opinion, a very high level of emotional intelligence, of trauma, being trauma informed, knowing power dynamics and how it affects knowing the identities of the people in the circle versus the facilitators of the circle. Like, it's a lot that goes into it, the logistics. Like, so we our kind of bread and butter is our training and our apprenticeship. But yes, so that's my answer.
Yeah, and looking at the website, which is restorativehouston.org, and you go to the offerings tab and you see Pride Circles. Is this exactly what I think it is?
Yes, so we are going to start that up again. We did a series of Pride Circles already. And then now we're actually trying to, because the first series was virtual. So right now we're trying to locate an actual space where we can host them in person, because we just found that virtual, there's no, it's a lot harder for people to engage with virtual. So we are looking for a space. But yes, that's 100% our one of our goals.
Which
To start up.
I think this is incredible. And I love it. And let's dive a little deeper into why you left Christianity. And this is like a very deep subject, and I know it can bring a lot of emotions and feelings, but part of this podcast is to give that authentic voice to the stories that don't reach the headlines, right? And
Yes.
walk us through your journey discovering maybe I don't have a place in Christianity, or I don't have this, or I don't have that, right? Walk us through that journey for you, because this is very deep. And as somebody who has struggled with religious trauma myself, I also have not found a place within a religious community. Because I do feel, after going through conversion therapy for 2.5 years, I feel disconnected from religion. I consider myself as like a progressive Christian, but at that, it also feels like another label to me. And I've always struggled with like the organized religion, and it's always felt a little cultish, like what I've noticed. Because everybody talks the same, they walk the same. And I'm like a people observer. So I sit and I watch, and watching people in the church that I used to go to, it's like they all act the exact same. They look the exact same. It's like, this is literally a cult. And, I live in the state of Kansas. So Westboro Baptist Church is here in the state of Kansas. Literally right across the street is a trans house and a pride house. And whenever I've had the, me and my mom took a trip down to the state capitol, which the Westboro Baptist Church is within a couple miles from the state capitol in Kansas. So the state capitol is Topeka. And if anybody listening ever gets a chance to, please check out the Pride House across the street from Westboro Baptist Church. But I looked at my mom and I was like, what do you want me to do? She said, flip them off. And I said, really? I said, there's cameras. She said, oh, even better, flip them off twice. And I did. And
I love your mom.
everybody does, because she's everybody's mom.
Oh.
She loves everybody until she has a reason not to. And I learned that. But I did. I flipped off Westboro Baptist Church, not once, but twice. And I took a picture doing it. And it felt really good. Now, let me give you a backstory on why it felt good, because I went to my first Pride Festival. Do you want to take a guess at who was there?
Oh God, them.
Westboro Baptist Church, but more specifically, Mr. Fred Phelps himself. I talked about this on an earlier podcast, which it is earlier based on when this episode will be releasing. And I remember him like standing there, looking at us, and just you can just see the hate and the disgust on his face. You can just see it. Like, you're literally at a Pride Festival with drag queens walking around. You see people wearing less and less clothes, but it's a safe space, and it's just that safe space. And it's specifically designed to bring the community together, kind of like these community circles are. But I will never forget just seeing him standing there in all of his wrinkly ass self, to put it lightly. But he's just sitting there, and he has a sign that says, "Homo sex is a sin." And I was thinking, like, it's not, but okay. And based on what I learned, my grandmother was Lutheran, but she never forced me into religion. My mom was forced to go to, go to church as a child. She has her own like retributions of religion herself, but I wasn't forced to go into church at all. I grew up non-religious. But then I went to school, and seeing as how like a lot of my community was based on like Mormon, because at that time the LDS church was very heavy in my hometown. Like, we had the international headquarters that used to be there before it became the Church of Christ. Whenever Church of Christ and LDS was merged, and then they separated in 2014. It was definitely an interesting switch in the community, because you see a whole different like atmosphere. It's like whenever you just walk around, everybody seems more happier. And There was a point in time where a couple years ago, I went and spoke about anti-trans legislation in the same place that I graduated from, which is the RLDS Auditorium, or used to be the RLDS Auditorium, and now it is the Church of Christ Auditorium. And they don't allow schools to graduate out of there anymore because, well, yeah, a lot of different reasons. A lot of the times that is because of conflicts within the schools itself, and they kind of like overlap, like graduations tend to run over a little bit. And I remember receiving that message like, hey, can you come and talk about anti-trans legislation? And I was like, where? He was like, oh, at the Community of Christ. I said, excuse me, you want me to do what? You want me to come and speak about anti-trans legislation in that auditorium? Are you serious? He's like, oh yeah, it's very well welcome here. And I was like, okay. Because that's based on what I already knew. So I had a preconceived notion going into it, but then it exceeded my expectation. I got up and started speaking, and everybody was like really in tune with it. And after I finished speaking and, sharing a little bit about sharing about me, sharing about my advocacy and, my own story, I had people come up to me and saying, thank you so much for opening my eyes. And I was like, what the fuck just happened? Because it's like, it's that very real, like, affirmation. After I've been harmed by religion and used as a weapon against me, now I'm seeing these affirmations from a religious community. And I was like, oh my God, this is definitely different. And this is definitely a unique feeling. Have you ever had like a similar experience, Perla? Like, I don't know. Walk us through like just that discovery, like that self-discovery, and like what did it look like for you?
Well, for me, it was, it was gradual, but also from one day to the next simultaneously, because, when you look, well, I don't know if you feel this way, but when I look back, I now see, oh, I was kind of, quote unquote, deconstructing, but it was very subconscious at the time. I didn't realize I was. But I was kind of thing. But then the day that I snapped out of it, I snapped out of it. Like it was a moment that I will forever remember that changed my life, and that I went from like literally the most radical Christian you ever met to, and when I say radical, I mean charismatic, tongue speaking, like I mean fully in it, to yeah, this is not for me anymore kind of thing. And then I never struggled with doubt about it after that moment. So it's a very kind of unique story, because I've never heard another person just be able to detach that way. But for me, like my entire life growing up, I was born into, Christianity. My parents started off as Catholic. They became Southern Baptist when I was 2 years old. And then from there, we went more and more extreme. So Southern Baptist was like the mildest form of Christianity. Well, after Catholicism, of course. But after that, we went to Pentecostalism, then Apostolic churches, then we ended up in well, I ended up in non-denominational but very charismatic evangelical church. So my trajectory, that was kind of my trajectory in Christianity. But what really I think, I did go to school to I got my degree from a secular university, even though I did minor in religious studies. And now I realize that even though what I was in college and I was learning all of these things, it would later come into play for when, and I think that's why I was able to detach completely when I did make that decision, because of the groundwork that was done when I went to college and I learned how the Bible was completely pieced together throughout millennia, actually. by hundreds of different authors, many of whom we don't even know who they are. They taught me how they figured out all of this. They taught me who actually wrote the Bible that we can prove. I learned the entire history of Christianity from, the moment Jesus allegedly died to now, and just the absolute horror of all of it. And even though at that time I was so brainwashed that even though I knew all of what I learned was true, the way that I justified it and my cognitive dissonance said, okay, yes, but even so, the Holy Spirit still can speak through the Bible truth into me, kind of thing. Like, but still, even if the Bible has been edited and just completely torn apart and like pieced together again, still it's the Word of God because the Holy Spirit still can speak through it to me. And so I kind of all of that I learned was kind of simmering in the back burner the whole time. So then I started to engage with Bethel's. I don't know if you're familiar with Bethel in California, with what's his face? Oh gosh, no, I'm forgetting their names. That's a good, great thing, but Valentin and the other guy. Anyway, it's a really big ministry, very well known, kind of mainstream, I feel, now. I don't know. Anyway, I started to consume a lot of their material. And the one thing I will credit them with is that they're the only reason I started to be exposed to more mental health-ish type things because they spoke about those things. They were the only ones in my bubble because I was absolutely not consuming anything that was not explicitly Christian. No movies, no books. I mean, I'm telling you, I was a radical extremist Christian. And so the only reason I started to hear the terms mental health, self-love, trauma was because of the material Bethel was speaking on. And so that immediately hooked me because even though, actually that's what I went to school for. I majored in psychology. That's just always been something I've been interested in because I've been through so much. I always wanted to help others with, now I know it's trauma. At the time, I didn't even have that language, but I just wanted to help others that had gone through a lot. So when I heard about trauma and what trauma was and, where it came from and what mental health is, emotional health, and all these things, it just completely resonated because it was already in me. I just didn't have the language. I just hadn't been exposed to that information. So anyway, I started to, and of course, Bethel packaged it as a Christian notion, as Christian stuff, and sprinkled, scripture throughout it and like translated it into Christianese. But still, the essence of it was mental health and trauma related. So that was my ticket out because once I started to actually deal with my trauma and understand it and self-validate, because that was a huge thing for me, is when I started to recognize, no, this that I went through is fucked up, like severely fucked up. This is actually abuse. This is not okay. And I started to grieve for myself and I started to feel that pain that I didn't even know I had. It was like a well that just opened up and gushed out all of this pain and all of this that I, and that journey took me to the point where that fateful day that I was talking about, when I was actually talking to Jesus, I was driving my car and I had already done all the work that I could possibly do about self-hatred, because self-hatred was my ultimate enemy, my biggest dark quote unquote demon, like I used to believe, that wouldn't leave me alone. It was just such deep self-loathing that I had for myself. And I had already dealt with my father issues, my mother issues. I had fasted and prayed and I had, learned scripture and done all the Christian things, inner healing with the church, all of it. And it still was there. And so I was talking to Jesus in my car and I asked him, where, I need you to tell me, I need you to show me where this self-hatred is coming from, because I cannot live like this anymore. Like, I have done everything and I need you to show me, because if not, I don't want to live anymore. And so in that moment, I heard and I felt and I sensed Jesus say, it is that your self-hatred is coming from the actual gospel that you believe is my gospel, but it's literally destroying you, because I, again, was born into Christianity. So I was 2 years old when I first started hearing, we are sinners, we deserve hell, and only because Jesus died of horrifyingly agonizing, brutal death is why God tolerates me. But I still deserve eternal torment, regardless of whether I accept Jesus. Like, I still deserve it. I'm not going to get it, but I still just, that's what I deserve. And it was a very it wasn't like I was consciously believing that. It was a very subconscious, which is why it took so long and so much for me to realize that that's what the root of it was, until, that whatever conversation I had with whatever that was. But I kind of needed it to be from Jesus in the moment. I needed to believe that it was from Jesus, because I heard Jesus say, like, it's okay if you let go of me. It's okay if you let go of believing this, because what's most important for me is your well-being and your healing, and I don't care about it. And that's when I realized, if there is a God, that God, and that God is love, that God is never going to put his ego and his, whatever name above the well-being of the people that he claims to love unconditionally. And so when I was hearing that from what I thought was Jesus in that moment, I realized, oh my gosh, like, he really doesn't care what I, he doesn't even care what that I believe in him, because I did hear that. Like, I don't care if you believe in me. I don't care if you believe that I died for your sins. I'm not going to send you to hell, because I am love. Like, I am so the opposite of what they've taught you. And literally, you, like, even if you never believe in me ever again, if you renounce me, whatever you do, I don't care. I love you and I always will. And you're not going to go to hell. And so in that moment, I let go. I completely, fully let go of all of it. Of and I can't stress enough how this belief system was everything to me. It was my entire universe. It was my entire identity. I did not know anything outside of this. And I just let it go in that moment, all of it. And obviously it was after that, I had to rebuild myself, and it was very hard and it was very agonizing, and it was one of the hardest things I've ever done and painful things I've ever done, but it was so worth it. Anyway, I can't go into that later or whatever, but that was pretty much what did it for me. So yeah.
I know it's incredibly difficult to talk about, this subject because there's a lot to unpack. And, but at the same time, I feel that these are the discussions that we need to have to debunk these myths that you have to be a part of a religion in order to believe in something. You have to do this and you have to do that and you have to be like this. All of like those social constructs, right? And I'm really excited, to continue, continue on these conversations. And we did an earlier episode about the decolonization of self-care. And I would love to know your thoughts on decolonizing our communities. How do you see that we can continue to build community in a decolonized way? Because like you said, restorative justice runs deep in like indigenous communities, and so does decolonization. How do we as a community recognize the need to decolonize our communities, and how can we put the path forward?
So I think that there's many ways, right, to decolonize, but I feel like the main way is to center a communal worldview, because we are so detached and isolated from each other. We're so brainwashed into individualism that we don't even realize sometimes that it's affecting us so much. So, for example, this our last gathering we had with Restorative Houston, the location where we are at is not great. It's kind of out in the border of Houston, where kind of nothing is out there. So it's pretty far from most people. But the people that showed up were like, I really wanted to show up because I know it's worth it. But a lot of people didn't because it was so far. And we were just talking about how it's going to take effort. It's going to cost us our convenience, which is what the imperialist colonizer system has purposefully gotten us so severely addicted to comfort and convenience. And that is, those are two things that I think if we get rid of those, it's like almost half of the whole colonization. So if we can just push ourselves out of our comfort zone, if we can just give that little bit of effort to drive to the place, to get out of our houses and go to these events, and not just events, but I mean, personally, if it was up to me, we would have them in people's homes, because that's how obviously this started. Obviously, it started around the fire in the village, but then it became houses that people would go to each other's houses and have these circles. But now, we're so huge and industrialized, we can start by just going to the thing, going to the event, going to the circles. And every person, I mean, every time they go, they're like, oh man, this was worth it. Even though they were complaining and bitching the whole way there, they were like, man, I'm so glad I came. And so, but we have to continue that and be consistent with it, because again, we're very addicted, and I am too. I'm not immune to it. I have to every single time be like, no, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go no matter how I feel. Obviously, take care of yourself. Don't like, overdo it or burn yourself out. But there's a difference between do I actually have the energy, and is this just me not wanting to do it or not wanting to put that effort, or am I actually super depleted and it would benefit me more to just rest, And I think even that is a form of decolonizing, because you have to get in touch with yourself and learn your actual needs and parse it out with your wants and get to know yourself so that you can even know if, okay, am I just being wallowing in my comfort and convenience, or am I genuinely, legitimately need to rest, you know? So those two things, know yourself, know your needs, know how to meet your needs, but also once your personal needs are met, push yourself out of your comfort zone, sacrifice a little bit of your comfort and your convenience, because you will reap the rewards. And that's how you if when we decolonize individually, that's the only way we're going to decolonize as a whole. And so when we get together, imagine, I mean, once all of, like, let's say a group of us has done the work of dealing with our trauma, knowing our needs, knowing ourselves, and then we get together and do a circle, that's when it's the most powerful, because then, you know, in the circle, then we are aware of our own stuff, and then we don't like dump it on the circle. So, because an important thing to say is that these circles are not therapy, they are not mental illness treatments or anything like that. We're not there to solve anyone's problems, or give advice. We're there to be seen, to be heard, to be validated, to be witnessed, fully. And so when people come with like a severe wound that has not been tended to, or like they have not learned to, you know, take care of their own themselves to a certain degree, then they come with a lot of expectations, and they're not this is not what that is. Like, this is where yes, you will be heard, you will be seen, you will be validated, you will be embraced, but it's not, we're not going to solve your problems, and we're not going, you know. And so now, out of that, like, if you connect with people in the circle and then become close, then absolutely, they may be a part of the solution to your problems. They may be a resource for you and all of, and then the community. But that's like a journey. That's a process. It's not like you're gonna show up the first time and everybody's gonna like immediately, you know, be there for you or in that way. But when that's the whole point is when you go to these consistently, you build community, which is actual connection, actual relationship with people, then that is what becomes your resource and your support system. So the circles themselves is a way to help build that for you, to help you that journey get started, but it's not like an end all be all to people's like all their problems and issues and trauma. Like, we are not therapists against, and we, you know. So anyway, I forgot the question.
You
I answered.
actually answered the question like literally to the T. And
Okay.
you know, that question was, what does decolonization look like and how
Oh,
can we
yes.
root it within like our communities? And you answered it in a way that it actually kind of got me thinking a little bit. And I would love to do, you know, obviously a separate episode and do like more of a deep dive into that with you if you would be of interest to do that, because there's a lot to kind of like pick apart here. And
Absolutely.
I've been contemplating doing like some type of like series around this, and I keep coming up with these ideas, and last time I came up with an idea it created this movement. And I know
Yes.
whenever movements get started from scratch, a lot of the times they flop, right? Because you know there's a lack of interest in it. Or, you know, people get burnt out very heavily because burnout is so incredibly real in these spaces. So my last question to you, how do you focus on your own self-care? Because There's a lot going on in the world right now. There's a lot going on in the country. There's a lot going on in the world. And how do you keep yourself grounded? What are some of your self-care tricks, techniques? What does that look like to you?
So I'm still a very, very spiritual person. it's completely outside of religion, and actually I've been reconnecting with my indigenous spirituality, but even then I'm not like fully like this religion or that, or I take from a lot of different belief systems and spiritualities. But honestly, that is my number one self-care, I guess, trick or tool, because personally, I believe that when we are human beings, are body, mind, soul, spirit. And when we don't tend to our spirit, even if we tend to our physical, our mental, our emotional, in my experience, if I don't tend to my spiritual, I am not going to be okay. And what that looks like for me personally is I do believe there is a higher power, whatever. I don't believe it's a deity. I don't believe it has a gender or a personality per se. I think it's just whatever we need it to be, and it's what connects us with each other, with the earth, with nature, with all living things, with the universe. But it is whatever we need it to be in the moment. So, for me, sometimes that does look like a father, because I am in need of a father in that moment. Sometimes it looks like a goddess. Sometimes it looks like my higher self. Sometimes it looks like my ancestors. And so I speak to, like I said, sometimes it's my higher self. That's actually been really powerful for me, to speak to my higher self, to ask my higher self, what do I need? What yeah so speak I just had a really powerful encounter with an ancestor. I did a guided meditation about that, and it was incredible. Like, I got so much healing out of that. And so obviously that paired with the emotional, the physical, and the mental, all of it together is really important. Like, so you can't just do one or the other. You have to approach all of, well, you don't have to do anything, but in my experience, that's what has kept me super sane and replenished and kind of afloat in this batshit crazy world, is remembering all the things. So also deep breathing, that's huge for me. Moving my body is huge. Like, if I don't move my body, I'm not going to be okay either. Trying to be conscious of what I'm eating and putting in my body. Also, like, for the mental side of it, I'm very, and this is okay, I've developed all of these things over time. Okay, it's not like, and I'm not like an expert 100%, but I have made it a very huge priority to really watch what I'm feeding myself. So yes, I am always going to be aware of what's going on in the world, but I only follow almost exclusively like mental health content on social media, or uplifting content, or things about my spirituality, things that will feed either my mind, body, or soul, or spirit. And I literally have blocked all the celebrity shit, all the like, I have, and that's again, that's effort. Like, I have put in the effort to completely scrub all of my social media accounts, including TikTok, Instagram, of all the bullshit that was affecting me in a negative way. And that's, for me, my mental hygiene. And part of my mental hygiene is curating my social media because I am 100% addicted. I'm not even gonna deny that, but it doesn't have to be as bad when you take the time to curate it. Because I see people that they can't even go on there at all because they haven't taken the time to curate it. So they are bombarded with all this shit that completely fucks them up. And it's understandable when but again, that's an effort that I put into. And now, I mean, I haven't had to do that in years because I took the time up front to do it. And so everything that I get is amazing. It's like super beneficial and like it feeds me. So that, and then that helps a lot because, like I said, I'm definitely online a lot. So it helps with my thoughts and what I'm thinking about. And I read a lot. That's another thing. Reading fantasy is one of the biggest therapeutic things for me because when I was a Christian, that was not godly. It was worldly, blah, blah, blah. And so the whole time I was a Christian, I read incessantly, but it was all Christian nonfiction. So it was when I came out of Christianity, I was like, oh, like finally I can read fiction. And I've been so addicted to it ever since. And so that's a huge part of my mental health is reading fiction, fantasy, things that make me happy that and believe it or not, I get a lot out of fantasy stories and fictional stories. I've actually gotten a lot of healing out of it. People don't understand how powerful fiction is and can be. But yeah, that's one of the things that makes me happy that I do. Also, doing things that make you happy, doing things that bring you joy, that feed your inner child. So for me, that was roller skating. When it wasn't hot, super hot, I was doing it almost every day, and it was amazing. Being in nature is a huge thing for me as well. I regularly try to go into the park and just be in nature. Oh my gosh, so many things. The emotional part, I try to always, like, if I'm going through something, I try to consume stuff that I know that's going to address whatever it is that I'm going through. At my lowest, I mean, not to get dark, but I was pretty suicidal. Not like actually gonna do it, but like close to it kind of thing. I literally went on YouTube and I was like, why should I stay alive? Like, please give me reasons for me to stay alive. And I just scrolled and scrolled through videos until I came to one that actually spoke to me and really helped me. So I'm very proactive about whenever I'm like super down or like in a really dark place, I do, again, I think it just goes back to that effort, that like rising above that like thing that neutralizes us in this culture of like just wanting to not do anything, just lay in bed all day. But for me, just turning around and scrolling is the lowest effort thing. And for me, that has been huge. So in doing that, consuming podcasts that I know will benefit me. So anyway, all that to say that all of those things are what I do. It's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you gave me a little bit of insight on some like self-care techniques, myself and things that I can definitely try too. So I appreciate you. And with that, Perla, thank you so much for bringing some wisdom and some, this energy into the healing spaces and for coming onto the podcast today too. I greatly appreciate you and I appreciate, the work that you do and just keep being the badass human being that you are. And thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I really do appreciate you.
No problem, Zachary. Thank you so much for everything you do. And I always like share all your stuff because I'm like, yes, that's so awesome. So this is super important work, and I am incredibly grateful as well to you. And yeah, loved being on the podcast.
Absolutely. You have an open invite anytime, and you take care of yourself, okay?
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye bye.